The heartbreaking end of the Chicago Bears, how Nick Foles figured out a way, the Chargers solved that Ravens offense, the Cowboys won on both sides of the ball, and the Colts defense just keeps getting better. It was the wildest of wild card weekends, and we're breaking it all down on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. Wild card weekend. It was a wild card weekend. It didn't really work that well.
Nope,
but it was a pretty crazy weekend, and we're still a little bit. I think we're both a little bit phased from that Bears Eagles game. We're in a bit of a cloud right now, but we're gonna fight through it, and we're gonna have a great show. Isn't that right, Andy?
You'd think I'm in a cloud because I sounded totally in a cloud in our little pre-show discussion. Now, as you know, I don't watch a special team, so I'm not. You got to tell me what happened at the end of Bears Eagles.
So you're not even sure who won these games, then?
Well, yeah. 43 yards, a chip shot. So I figure, he had to hit that, and I did see he hit the. The practice kick before the timeout to ice them. So I figure we got Bears matched up to Rams next week. That's how that would work.
Now it's too much of a troll. And I should mention to everyone, Andy came on the headset tonight and seemed completely confused about who I was and what he was doing and what sport we covered on the show. But I think we worked through it. Yeah, let's start with that Eagles Bears game. I mean, it was. Gut-wrenching. I'll just say this, and I'll apologize to Eagles fans right off the top, and I'll just say, Eagles deserve to win this game. They played well on the road. They earned this win. But this is too heartbreaking. This is too much for a season to end like this. Like, I can't handle when there's someone who is so clearly the GOAT of the game that you know... Cody Parkey, the boos that were raining down on this guy who looks like he's about 12 years old as he jogs off the field at the end of the season. I know he has a job and all that, and he should do it better instead of hitting the upright, but I gotta send the guy like a Vermont teddy bear or something.
He pointed to the sky afterwards because I admire that he does that. I assume he does that on makes and misses. Matt Stover used to do that as well. So you have to like the integrity behind that.
He didn't shake his fist at the sky.
Yeah, that's really tough though. I like the special teams to reflect the way the game played out, and in this case, I don't think. Either team dominated. I think the game was as close as the score suggested. And what I also liked is both teams played well within the context of their identities. The Bears totally shut down the run. Their defense gave Foles some trouble early on, some bad reads on those interceptions. And then Foles made some great throws on designer route combinations, especially in the red zone, which the Eagles are tremendous at, and got the better of the Bears down there. And these are the things both teams have done to get to this place. I guess all things equal, I'd rather see the 12-win team advance instead of the 9-win team. I want the regular season to mean something. Mm-hmm. But this was a well-played game within the context of both teams' identities, and that's really important to me.
No, it was, and let's start with the Eagles here and what they did offensively down the stretch, because Foles was he was shaky in the first half of this game. The interception to Roquan Smith, that was it was bad ball placement and a great play by Roquan Smith. The second interception, the play he extended outside the pocket, and I don't know what the outcome of that play was supposed to be, a jump ball to Nelson Agholor in the back of the end zone. I mean, that's a incredibly low percentage play anyway. And I know his arm got scraped a little bit, and that's why the throw probably came up so short. But that was bad football.
That was
a bad play.
Yeah, really bad. Yeah, he was smothered, and my guess is he didn't read the split safety to single high rotation, which is what Amos did, which is why he was already – the guy that intercepted the ball. It's why he's already drifting in that direction, just reading Foles. So that was a bad QB play, but, you know, those were really about it for Foles. He made some big-time throws, let's call them critical throws. Trubisky actually made some big-time throws. Foles made some critical – intermediate throws, especially down the stretch on that game-winning drive. Goddard had the catch and run. Ertz went up for one over the middle. Who caught one on the outside? Someone that caught one on the outside between those two guys to move the sticks. It was a very impressive performance. Again, within the context of how Philadelphia plays, they're not a speed offense. They don't have a lot to beat you downfield. They're more of a power passing offense, a ball control offense that wins with size and intermediate route designs. And they did that. It took them a while to get going and get really comfortable with it, but that's what they ultimately did against the Bears.
And let's talk about the Bears offensively just for a little bit here. I guess we have to start there because, look, I have been very critical of Mitchell Trubisky, and I do not take back any of those criticisms during the season because I thought he was a very shaky quarterback during the regular season. I thought he was shaky for about 60% of this game. The throw he made to Allen Robinson that beat that cover two, that really was the play that set up the field goal. That was goosebumps. That was just a monster throw that they had to have, and he made it.
And he had a couple of balls down the seams that also worked. And those down the seams is where you beat cover three, which is what Philly plays, and then that throw outside. If you've got the arm and the courage, you can beat cover two like he did on that over the top of Avante Maddox. But let's remember, if Avante Maddox catches that early interception that he bobbled and then didn't catch along the sideline where he jumped the slant route, and that actually wound up being a harbinger for a big part of the second half. They beat him on those double moves on some of those slant route jumps. But if he had caught that first one, that's a different game, and we're viewing Trubisky very differently. He had another ball, forget who it was,
Trey Sullivan in the end zone.
Correct, and that was worse. Exactly.
Yes.
So it was. He got away with it. Foles didn't early on, and the narrative very well could have been tilted in that other direction. But it's a 60-minute game, so overall, it's a successful season for the Bears, though, right? They're going in the right direction. They got their young QB. They got the coach. I mean, there's a lot to feel good about with Chicago, and that's good news for them because they basically mortgaged this upcoming offseason for this season to get Khalil Mack, to get some of those other draft moves that they made. The GM Ryan Pace, he went all in now, or at least he went all built now. It's not a one-or-done type of approach. I'm happy if I'm a Bears fan big picture, even though I'm totally heartbroken Monday morning.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought their offensive line, and look, this was a night where the officials mostly let the guys play. The Bears offensive line was a little bit grabby, you could say. It was all borderline, but the Eagles pass rush did not do a whole lot in the second half, and that's what creates those opportunities for the double moves, or there were a couple of zone snaps where Trubisky just had all the time in the world to find someone.
That's a great point, Gary. It's a really great point. That Bears O-line has been solid, if not spectacular, throughout much of this season. Having Kyle Long back really solidified it. Witzman actually did a pretty solid job filling in for Long. But that's a good front five. James Daniels as well, their rookie left guard, has gotten better over the course of the season. So you're right. We think of the Bears as this misdirection, almost quasi gimmicky offense. The more I watch, they're really not that. The more I watch them, the more I think I'm looking at just a very traditional offense that does have some outstanding smoke and mirrors, especially early in games. But I don't think they're built on those new age Andy Reid, Matt Nagy gimmicks, let's call it. I don't think they're built on that as much as people think. I think it's just more of a steady execution-based offense that plays off of their defense. And in order to play that way, you've got to have an offensive line that wins more than it loses. And the Bears' offensive line certainly at least drew a stalemate against a more talented Eagles defensive line.
Yeah, and last note I just wanted to give on this game. I thought it was very nice of Avante Maddox to do his tribute to Jalen Mills in this game and get beat on three double moves since Jalen Mills couldn't be there.
Low blow.
They won.
Low blow. So those guys, Gary, Maddox and Rasul Douglas, they've gotten better over the
course
of the season.
Much better. They've gotten much better.
Much, much better, which gets back to the point. It's kind of a theme I think we'll wind up bringing up a lot here. Mainly it's because part of the reason that I jumped on our podcast in a haze was my mind was on this magazine story I've got to write tonight with Adam, calling Adam Dorson, our editor. And what we were talking about is a lot of the standing defenses, these final eight teams, they're defenses that play very basic schemes. The Chargers are straightforward scheme. The Patriots are a straight man-to-man scheme. Chargers are a zone scheme. The Colts are cover two team. Chiefs, a straight man-to-man team. The Eagles are a straight cover three zone scheme. And part of the reason teams play that way is they believe they get better over the course of the season when they keep it simple. And I think we've seen that from a lot of these teams. And the other part of that that gets lost is if it's a simpler scheme, then your backups, when they come in, they have a chance to get better much more than I think a backup who's coming into a complex scheme where he's got a lot to learn and he hasn't had as much tape because they do 1,000 things. So there's only a few examples of 1,000 things rather than dozens and dozens and dozens of examples of just these few things. The Eagles scheme, I think, is set up to make young guys off the bench have a better shot at being successful. All they need is the reps to do it. And Maddox and Douglas are good illustrations of that.
No, that's a great point. Before we move on to the other games, this is what we do on the postseason shows. The losing team, we do sort of a quick off-season look ahead. My question to you on the Bears, Andy, and I don't think you have a good answer to this. I don't think there's any way you would know, but I just kind of want to wonder aloud. I feel like Mitchell Trubisky never gained full comfort in this offense. I think they're still searching for something to sort of be figure out what the staples of this passing game is going to be. He's still, like you said, that last drive was tremendous. He had a couple of great seam throws in that game today, but he's so late throwing over the middle, and he's so wide every time he throws outside the numbers, and it's, you know, anything but a wide open throw on a double move. I'm not sure if they just go back and sort of say we're going to simplify it into this or we're going to emphasize these things next year. I don't think it quite worked. I don't think the marriage between the system and the quarterback quite worked this year.
I think it – I wouldn't go that far. I agree with you that Trubisky has – we know he has room to grow because he's not the same quarterback when he gets into his second and third read. Collinsworth has said that on the broadcast. You can see that in the way the Bears play. It's backed up by some of those advanced stats about his rating when he throws the ball in 2 seconds versus 3 seconds or however they break it down. So he's got work to do because you're not comfortable in an offense until you get through all the progressions. Think of Drew Brees, how he always goes through progression 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Even if he throws the ball on number 2, he goes through 3, 4, and 5 in the motions of it in practice. He's famous for that. That Brees is more comfortable in the Saints offense than any QB in the league is in their respective offense. Well, Trubisky, we're not saying he has to be Drew Brees, but he's so far from that right now. There's room to grow, and that's to be expected. Remember, he only played 12 games in college, and he ran a different scheme last year. So these starts now, he's basically a college senior by experience playing in an offense at the NFL level. So I think it's they're in an okay spot. Nagy has worked with a lot of quarterbacks before. I hope they get a lot of chance to spend time together this offseason and all the ways they can and all the rules and limits that they have on how much coaches and players can interact. I hope they find a creative way to circumvent that because I think there's something to work with here. But I'm with you. There's room to grow. And if Trubisky does not improve next year, the Bears probably go 10-6, and then we have a longer conversation about them.
Yeah. Yep. Other than that, this roster kind of set. Adrian Amos, I guess they might have to pay up a little bit for him. That's kind of it, though. Maybe you trade Khalil Mack, recoup some of those draft picks. Who knows?
Yeah, very good. Very good.
I'll take that. I'll take that as raucous laughter. Before we move on, you know what's smart? Kicking off 2019 by figuring out which roles your business needs to hire for, which happens to be exactly what 24 NFL teams are doing right now. You know what else is smart? Starting the new year off strong by going to ZipRecruiter.com/things to hire the right people. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and actively invites them to apply to your job. So you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. That rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. That's ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, one more note before we move on. Quick programming note, Andy and I will be previewing all the conference semifinal games on the Thursday Deep Dive show. Certainly Albert Breer, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr will have plenty to talk about on their Wednesday show, and we being myself, Jimmy Trina, and Scott Grambling, will be there Friday with the MMQB Gambling Podcast. I'm just telling you, we went 7-2-1 this weekend. We're now an absurd 33-10-2 over the last 3 weeks on Best Bets. If you don't already subscribe to these shows, you can get them, search for the MMQB podcast. It's free shipping too. We'll ship it right to your phone for free. Can't beat that. All right, Ravens Chargers, story of this game. We talked about it. Chargers got their second look at that Lamar Jackson new look Ravens offense, and they won this battle thoroughly. I mean, this was a mismatch. Chargers defense versus Ravens offense. They had a lot of safeties on the field rather than linebackers and a lot of speed, and it was there was very little hope for the Ravens in this game.
I feel like all you have to do is listen to our Thursday show. We said they've seen Lamar Jackson for the second time. Actually, our last Sunday show as well. Remember the Browns at the end of that game in Week 17 started condensing their fronts, moving guys inside, and Baltimore's rushing attack dried up a little bit. That's what we saw from the Chargers in this one. Derwin James has walked up on the line of scrimmage at times with Joey Bosa, lined up a little tighter inside. And then the other thing we saw was the Chargers penetrating against the Ravens rather than typically what defenders are taught to do is travel with a pull blocker. So when their left guard, James Hurst, starts pulling to your left as a defender, you've got to get one gap over to the left to keep up with Hurst. The Chargers, you know, there's a lot of complexities here. They got away from that a little bit, though. And mainly it started with their D front, just get the penetration, get in the backfield, kind of that old Mike Pettine, Rex Ryan theory, if you penetrate, you'll never be wrong. And that's what we saw, and the Ravens had absolutely no answer. So the other thing we've been saying all year from the Ravens is they've got this bells and whistles rushing attack. It's working really well. Jackson's great in it. All they're doing is betting that they can keep it fresh and teams cannot figure it out, and as soon as they do, they're going to get exposed, and the Ravens are betting that they won't get exposed until very late in this run, you know, late postseason, maybe next season if they go really well. While they got exposed in the first playoff game against the first team that saw it for a second time, so that's the Ravens, our state of the Ravens. We're going to talk all Lamar Jackson, I assume, because that's what this team's built on now. But it was so when's the last time, Gary, we saw one team ride such one clear tactic, Baltimore, that gap scheme running game with Jackson, and have that tactic so thoroughly shut down the second they got to the playoffs? I don't know when we've seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, look, it was something of a bad scheduling break, getting the Chargers in Week 16 and then getting them again in the playoffs here. And you know, I don't know. The Ravens at some point were going to fall behind in a game and probably did not have or do not have what it takes to mount a fast comeback, even though Lamar Jackson made it somewhat interesting in the end. The Chargers also helped them make that interesting by getting a couple of kicks blocked and Casey Hayward kind of just deciding he's not going to run downfield with Michael Crabtree for an easy touchdown and stuff like that. But
Let's look into the All-22 on that. We don't know on Hayward yet. Remember last year, Jared Cook got killed for quitting on a route, and then when you put on the All-22, you see that he thought it was a run play, not a pass play. And you know, so it's. But I know what you're saying. Yeah, the Chargers loosened up a little bit late in the game, and their pass rush happened to not get home when it would on a few snaps. It got home most of the game. That was another big factor, Gary, was Bosa and Ingram defeated Ronnie Stanley, who I thought had a really nice season, and especially Orlando Brown. He had a bad day, but he had a really good idea. And Orlando Brown at right tackle, their rookie third-round pick, who also had a stellar first year. But those guys got outclassed today by the Chargers' edge rushers. And when they didn't, Jackson ran around and happened to make some plays. But when they did get home, Jackson had nowhere to go and nothing to do with the ball.
Well, Chargers get to go to Foxborough. Another East Coast game, another 1 o'clock game here on Sunday. And by the way, I think the NFL does this most years, but I wasn't sure if they do it because they've been so weird and frankly reckless with the scheduling this year. But they did. Saturday teams from this weekend will play Saturday next week. Sunday teams from this weekend will play Sunday next week, which is a nice fair way to do it for once. But they go to Foxborough.
Well, that's just lucky, though. I mean, that could have gone any. These schedules are predetermined. Those second round schedules are predetermined.
They are.
Like
aren't
the Patriots
they?
At 1 o'clock was decided a few weeks ago that they'd be. Yeah. So they got lucky on that one.
Well, it worked out, and we'll take it. Chargers going to Foxborough, though, for a this is a little old school game here. Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady. It's like from the flip phone days here.
I wonder if we'll see, and I don't want to get, I know we're going to preview that game. I told you, I want to talk these divisional games, but you told me I can't. We got to wait till Thursday.
We had to talk about the games that happened this, you know, today, Sunday and Saturday.
Yeah, I just wonder if we'll see, the Ravens really gave the Chargers trouble early on with blitz looks and then bringing the pressure off of this guy. They'd show a bunch of stuff and then bring different stuff, the amoeba blitz stuff that they've been doing all season long, but they were even more aggressive with it early in this game. Their linebackers were very good on it, just like in the last meeting, and they had the Chargers totally befuddled. Phillip Rivers, you can't always tell when they're befuddled because as soon as Rivers realizes the scheme has out-leveraged us, he goes right to the flat and throws. And it sometimes looks like that's the design of the play. They're not dialing up plays for Austin Ekeler to catch a ball 2 yards downfield in the flat. Rivers just checks it down right away when the protection loses. He was doing that all game long in the first half. You wonder if the Patriots, who are not a big blitzing team, but will they take a page from that and try to get Phillip Rivers uncomfortable early? And then I think what you have to do is diversify from there, because what also happened was the Chargers finally did kind of figure out they got more comfortable, their protections got settled in, and Rivers started making some of those throws at the intermediate levels. Jimmy Smith was the guy he went after most often, and they didn't do it a ton, but they did more than enough in this game. Now, they'll have to do it more next week to beat Tom Brady, but I just wonder how the Patriots will approach Phillip Rivers. He's such a field general. You've got to make it a chess match.
Now, that's going to be a real good one. We will talk about it Thursday, though. You talked about it way too much here, Andy.
I'm sorry. And by the way, they're all going to be good ones. These are the divisional round games. These are the best teams left. So we don't need to say, oh, it's going to be a good game. That'll be a great one. They're all good matchups. So the last seven games from here will be great.
We, in the office, we call it the conference semifinals is what we branded these.
Do
because it's
really?
No longer – divisional rounds are – divisional round doesn't matter anymore. It used to be wild card round used to be wild card teams, and it's not that anymore. So divisional round is meaningless. Do the Chargers get to
– after... What are you talking about?
Do the Chargers now get to proclaim themselves AFC North champions because they beat the Ravens?
That's the name of the playoff round. They call it the divisional round. It's not you that gets to decide that around the office. That's just
no, we're just saying
that.
it's a dumb name, so we're going to call it the conference semifinals because divisional round is just meaningless jargon.
You know what? At SI, all right, fine. You poke the bear, Gary, editor at SI. If you're going to go sit around and talking about how we're titling this, then let's get rid of the hyphen that we use on wild card at SI. That's embarrassing. Lowercase W, lowercase C, wild card hyphenated, and let's actually label these things and call it wild card round and give some capitalization like it deserves. Why are we talking about renaming it when at SI, the other thing we need to do is have the courage to stop using Roman numerals on the Super Bowl. If we all just agree to stop doing that, the NFL will get rid of that. We'll all be able to remember and understand what the Super Bowl logos say.
I love the Roman numerals.
I hate them. There's a reason they went extinct.
Yeah, SI Stylebook. I can't break into it. NFL Draft, the D is lowercase. NCAA Tournament for college basketball, the T is lowercase.
And I griped about it my first year and was basically told, you do not want to fight this political fight, new guy, first year. You're a long way. I'm only in my sixth year now, but I am going to say that the style book's horrible. It's horrible in spots. And I already sent an email to the person that told me not to send this to the higher-ups, outlining 30 things that we can – it's actually the guy I was on the phone with earlier about that magazine story. But we – yeah, style book's got to be updated. Has to be. All right.
I don't know. I'm in my 14th year at Sports Illustrated, and I gave up that fight about 8 years ago. So you'll reach my point soon.
All right. You and I could work together on that. You edit 85-90% of my stories. Just edit it the way I write it then, and then we just do it anyway.
I don't know. It's a little too rogue. I'm a little too old for this.
What do we got? What's our other game?
Ravens.
Saturday,
no, no, we're talking. We're talking Ravens.
Oh, Ravens off season.
Ravens look at. By the way, did you have a take? Did you want Flacco in the game second half?
I thought about it, and I'm sure they thought about it. And my thinking was, I think you've got just as much of a chance with Jackson's legs making improvisational plays as Flacco. So no, I did. I mean, that passing game was embarrassing, and no one can refute that, which is why they've been running the ball all year. We say that. Coaches tell you how they feel about their players by what they ask them to do. Well, they've never asked Jackson to do hardly anything passing the ball, and we saw why. But I thought the randomized playmaking, which, as our listeners know, I am not a fan of, but when you're in comeback mode and you've had nothing happen all game long, then that's your better chance versus dink and dunk Joe Flacco, who I've seen multiple times run the clock out on his own team in those kind of scenarios. So I understood it. That's a hard spot to be in, though, for Baltimore.
No, I thought, you know, a lot of people were saying, Chargers won't be ready for it. It's like Chargers –
there's nothing
Chargers
to be ready
don't,
for.
Chargers don't have a terribly exotic defense, and they played Flacco-like quarterbacks for 15 of the 16 weeks this season. It's not a huge adjustment for them if Joe Flacco comes into the game, not to mention Joe Flacco hasn't practiced for the first team in like 2 months now, so it was just not – there was no good option for the Ravens at that point, but I thought Flacco was a slightly worse option at that point.
Yeah, I agree with you. The last thing is we got that 7 defensive back package at the Chargers put in for Jackson. I think, you know, I heard maybe they had some issues at linebacker. Maybe they're not totally healthy there. But, those guys, their linebackers did come in when it was goal line packages, which the Ravens did not employ a whole lot in this game. I think the Chargers had this in the works for a couple of weeks now, because last week against Oakland, they sat Desmond King at times and they sat Adrian Phillips at times to get Rayshon Jenkins snaps. And Rayshon Jenkins wound up playing free safety in this game, so he wasn't on the screen a whole lot, but him being back at free safety is why they were able to put Jahleel Adai down there with Derwin James and Adrian Phillips at those linebacker spots. I think they knew that was their plan for Jackson all along. It was a fascinating plan.
Yep. And should Denver, not Oakland last week. The other irrelevant.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, AFC correct. Just, yeah. Oh, I knew I was watching weird-looking film. It was you're right, at Denver. And isn't that interesting that they're facing a team that is smash-mouth running, which is what you do on gap scheme runs, and their solution was, let's get smaller and faster to deal with that.
Yeah. No, that was I mean, look, they had the exact game plan to shut this thing down, and they were ready for it, and they got to prep a little bit last week, which is what you can do when you're a 12-win team. Quick Ravens look ahead here. Baltimore doesn't need to scrap what they did offensively this year. They just need to expand the passing game that they use off of it.
Correct. And then defensively, I think they're fine there. They do have... you know, Mosley's a free agent. I would imagine they're going to get him locked up either long-term or franchised. Suggs is a free agent. Za'Darius Smith's a free agent. So if those guys get away, you know, they're going to be in the market for a pass rusher there, which is they're not super dependent on because of all the blitzing that they do. But I hope they get Suggs. I don't know what he wants, if he wants to keep playing or not, but they've got to figure out Suggs and Smith. Brent Urban's or other free agent up front. Other than that, though, everyone's back and under contract. defensively. Yep.
That's going to be a really good division, except for maybe the Bengals next year, with the Browns on the rise and the Ravens on the rise and the Steelers certainly, if they get their lives in order, certainly very much ready contend there.
We said that about the NFC North this year, best division in football, Vikings, rock solid, Packers, Aaron Rodgers, Lions going all the way to the Super Bowl minus a game, according to Gary Gramley, which I guess, what do we call that, the SI, is that like the Super Bowl semifinal round now, is that what we call it?
That's just the conference championship.
All right, well, so but anyway, NFC North wound up being the weakest division in the NFC, so AFC North looks good right now, I guess.
And I just want to point out the Lions have plenty of representation in the playoffs still with Eric Ebron and Golden Tate. They're going to do good things with that third-round pick they got for Tate, though. Real good things. Cowboys-Seahawks. Cowboys, Saturday night, get the win. Dak Prescott, nice moment for Dak Prescott. It was the kind of sloppy defensive battle that we all kind of expected it would be. Both teams sort of, some might say, stubbornly stuck to the run for a while, though Dallas certainly was having more success than the Seahawks were. But I thought the Cowboys answered with a really nice drive after the Seahawks took the lead and retook the lead. And then the Cowboys really dominated the game in the fourth quarter, where everyone kind of said, well, close game in the fourth quarter, I'll take Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll instead of Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett. And not that Wilson did anything wrong, but Dak Prescott delivered a couple of big plays and one terrible red zone interception, but other than that, a couple of big plays.
Yeah, and one thing they did down the stretch a little bit was they finally started employing some coverage beater designs. Cooper on the 34-yard catch, he had what they call a dagger, where a guy inside runs a go route and then you run a dig underneath his go route, and it out-leverages a lot of zone coverages. Cooper had the 34-yarder there. And then a little bit later, there was a 27-yard catch he had. It was a deep post out of the slot versus Justin Coleman, their slot corner there, and that went in the opposite direction of a Prescott rollout. So we're using Prescott's legs. These are the kind of things we're begging the Cowboys to do. I didn't feel like they got into it a whole lot for a lot of the game. It was mostly spread out, Prescott throw hitch routes, and it wasn't quite getting it done. They had some plays from Ezekiel Elliott that kept them in it, but it was nice to see their passing game gained some kind of schematic traction late in the game, because when you're facing the Seahawks, you really should be doing that stuff because you know what they're going to be in coverage-wise.
Seahawks offense side of this. And look, I realize the Seahawks, you're not going to say, well, let's go out there and throw the ball 40 times in this game. Their identity is the ground game. They did lead this game in the second half, so it wasn't a complete disaster. But it just feels like they should have opened things up a little bit, especially, and I don't know, Doug Baldwin might have been playing hurt. I don't know exactly what his health status was, but Baldwin in the slot with Anthony Brown manning that, and it just felt like there were some opportunities to get something going in the passing game rather than just getting stuffed run after run on every drive.
Well, and I'm sure Seahawks fans, and probably a lot of the same ones that are saying they should have handed the ball to Marshawn Lynch against the Patriots in the Super Bowl are now saying, well, we shouldn't have kept handing the ball to Chris Carson inside. But all of this is access to the results analysis. That smash-mouth run game from Seattle is the reason they were playing in this postseason game. I understand why they would stick with it. The other thing to keep in mind, and it wasn't working, and Dallas out-executed them, and that's what happens in the game. Gets won by Dallas, but the plays that Seattle did have through the air were also coming off of the running game. Really, the only thing they did in the first half was that Dixon 27-yard catch on the three-level rollout play where it was a play action. Then on the very next snap, they had the 40-yarder to lock it on another play action. Deep balls for Russell Wilson, which he's so good at. Other than that, there was just nothing going from Seattle. So this was their formula all season. Run the ball, throw the ball off of run looks, and it just wasn't enough. Dallas out-executed them, and that's going to happen. That's not a coaching error. It's that formula that got them there. It just didn't work this time against a more athletic Cowboys defense.
Looking ahead to the Seahawks offseason, this is going to be interesting. And, I mean, Lord knows it was interesting last offseason, too. Frank Clark, KJ Wright, J.R. Sweezy, and DJ Fluker, Justin Coleman, who had a nice season in the slot, Earl Thomas, who obviously wasn't around for the second half of the season. All those guys, unrestricted free agents. So they might have even, you know, more turnover, probably not as drastic as last year, but it's they got decisions to make.
Will be interesting to see what they do with KJ Wright.
Yeah.
He's 29. He turns 30 in July. I mean, he was great in this game against Dallas. And when he was healthy this year, he was very good. I don't know the nature of his injuries. I'm sure they do. And that might factor into the decision. Why was he off of the field so much this year? And what does it mean for signing him long term? But that'll be an interesting one, because here they are in this quote-unquote rebuild, and it's gone really well. And it's gone well in part because they pulled the trigger and cut ties with some guys earlier rather than later. Chancellor, not by their choice necessarily, the neck injury, but Chancellor's gone, Averill's gone, Richard Sherman's gone. Do they draw the line at KJ Wright or not? I'll be interested to see how that goes.
Well, I just think his market overall is going to be fascinating as a guy coming off a game a year where he missed 11 games and is a 30-year-old linebacker. I don't know what the market is for him if he gets out there into the open market. Frank Clark's a guy they'll obviously they'll keep him, and those two guards will be interesting too. They had nice seasons. They're two journeymen. I don't think anyone's looking at them as, getting Andrew Norwell type contracts, but probably got a fight to keep them.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted Ethan Posick, so I would imagine, but he had a bad year. So that's a hard one, too, is to figure out what we do at guard. Wright, you know what KJ Wright reminds me of? Eric Weddle, when he hit free agency, had been with the Chargers for about 9 years. He's 30, and because he'd been a mainstay, we had this idea, well, he's old. Well, 30 is not super old. And the Ravens, he kind of got, I don't want to say a middling contract, because he's pretty well compensated for his safety. I mean, he's making about $8 million a year right now on his cap hits, but at $13 million signing bonus, a $13 million guaranteed at the time of his deal, Weddle didn't get a huge contract. I see KJ Wright as Eric Weddle kind of, and that if someone were to sign him, he could still be a really good cog in your defense for the next 4 or 5 years.
You think that long?
He's healthy. It goes back. We don't know his knee injury, but let's.
Exactly,
They said he's 100%, though, in this playoff game. So if that's true.
He looked it.
He absolutely looked it. So the question then is, what was causing the injuries? And if it's something we think is age-related, if it was a chronic type of thing, or not to be crass, but Sebastian Janikowski, old man, 57-yard field goal, bam, there goes my hamstring, just look like an old kicker. You know, if you fear that could be in play with Wright, I guess that's one thing. But he's been a pretty durable player over his career, and he was really good at the end of this season. He's going to be fascinating. That's, to me, I'm marking him the most interesting free agent heading into this offseason, mainly because he's the first one I'm super familiar with right now.
I like it. I'll co-sign that. This was a bad week for kickers. That might have been the last we saw of Sebastian Janikowski gripping his shattered hamstring. As he, I didn't know you could shatter a hamstring, but he did it. And that might have been it. Him, Parkey, Justin Tucker missed a kick. Chargers had the only good kicker this weekend. That's what it came down to. Colts and Texans. Matt Eberflus madness has gripped Andy Benoit. I mean, you are through the roof with this guy. Yeah,
I am. I think he's the best defensive head coaching candidate on the market, and the more I learn about him, the more I feel that way. He has done such an incredible job, and he did a great job again in this game against Houston. The Colts came out and played a lot of their basic zone stuff and said, let's see if Deshaun Watson can beat us. Watson could not. He was not very good from the pocket. That's something Houston's going to have to look at, too. They've got Sean Ryan's their QB coach. He's really big on what he calls quiet mechanics in the pocket. They're going to have to work diligently with Watson there, because he was just not good enough from the pocket in some key moments this year. We know he's capable of being good enough because we've seen it at times, but that's what Eberflus did. The Colts are so, they gave up 16.5 points a game over the final 10 games of the season, which would have been number one in the NFL if it were over the whole course of the season. So this defense that had nobody going into the year, and where all these rookies and all these young guys, all these journeyman cast-off guys, they get so much better down the stretch. They keep it simple, and they get to the details of their scheme. And then just when Watson started getting comfortable, Eberflus dials up the slot blitzes that he introduced late in the year. Mm-hmm. Kenny Moore was the guy. We said Kenny Moore was going to be a key player going into this game. And he started beating them tactically when he felt he had to. Masterful coaching. That's just one snippet of what they've done. The Colts defense is the most overachieving unit I can remember in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and look, this is a team that put up they put up 21 points in the first half. And obviously they went a little more conservatively in the second half, but this is a complete team. This is a complete team on both sides of the ball. I think you'd look at this and say, I mean, they're a top 10 unit on offense and defense. I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, can you say that? The Chargers, I guess maybe you'd say that about. Chiefs,
yeah,
you say that about.
Yeah, you could. But no, your points are good. I mean, this is an incredible. I feel like they're not getting talked about enough because we kind of got caught up with Seattle as the rebuilding team. And Indianapolis was a team everybody picked last or top mm-hmm. bottom five. And here they are now. Would anyone be shocked? Oh, I'm not supposed to talk about the Thursday games. Well, darn, I had a really good point here. Would anyone be shocked if they went into Arrowhead and upset the Chiefs?
No, I did not at all. That is the answer to that question. That's...
I'll admit this. When Chris Ballard said at the front after McDaniel spurned him, when he said that with the Patriots, the rivalry's back on,
yes.
I laughed at him. I didn't laugh at him publicly, but like at home here, I laughed and thought, oh, yeah, the Patriot rival.
Yeah.
The Patriots are worried about you guys. And here they are a game away from maybe seeing them in the AFC Championship. What a job Ballard did and what a job this coach. And Ballard, by the way, is the one that kept Eberflus in place. When they hired Eberflus for the McDaniels staff, they signed him, so now he's getting paid. McDaniels leaves. What do we do with Eberflus? Ballard's the one that convinced Frank Reich to keep him there. So that ought to go into the – Ballard's going to win Executive of the Year for whoever's giving out that award. But that should count as well in the plus column for him, as he kept a really good coach in place. I don't think he's going to be able to do it much longer, though. I think Eberflus will get a job.
Yeah. No, I'm going to talk about the coaches for my thing of the week, so I'll hold on to that for a few minutes, unlike you having to hold on to all of your conference semifinal previews until Thursday's show. But one more note before we move on. This is very polarizing among the MMQB staff, Andy, but what are your thoughts on Frank Reich's beard?
We
talked
this
about
already,
this a little
we?
Bit.
Yeah, and I said I thought that it's an elderly-looking beard for a guy that doesn't need it. A guy with that firm of a jaw should not be allowed to grow a beard. Leave that for the chubby-cheek guys like us, the smaller-chinned men.
Okay.
Not that kind of beard. He needs right. to have it shaped to his face like Sean McVay does or something. You know, thin, tightly trimmed beard. Not these rounded corners. Yeah.
I like the shagginess. I'm buying it.
I know you do. I know you. And the more I think about it, quite frankly, the stronger I feel about it. And I like Frank Reich a lot.
I think it's you and Jenny Rentis against the world on that.
Everybody likes his beard?
Everyone likes the beard. It's a good-looking beard.
You know what, though? They like the beard because they don't have to deal with the beard. They see it on TV, and it looks hairier than most. And it's always, look at that head coach. That's a different-looking coach. If you were married to Frank Reich or he's your father or you have to deal with him every day, you don't like that beard. You want him to shave that off and get back to looking like a groomed man. It's easy to like the beard because you don't have to deal with it.
If my wife There's could no grow that beard, I would encourage her to grow that beard. Let's do Texans offseason look ahead here. This game, I mean, look, Deshaun Watson is obviously going to be their quarterback for the next the next like 10 to 15 years, so we won't touch on that. I will just say about Watson's performance, you saw a lot of the things that people were concerned about him coming out of Clemson. It was almost like a low-light reel of some of the things you saw in college. And, hey, it's one game. He's got like a decade worth of games to make everyone forget about it, but this was a shaky outing. A lot of people, and look, their offensive line is bad. But, you know, I almost feel like that secondary is more problematic than the offensive line at this point, because Watson is going to try and extend plays. He's not playing terribly on time at this point. I don't know how much you upgrade your team by upgrading the offensive line, even though it's something you want to do. I feel like the secondary has to be upgraded because they can't cover anyone. They just made Dontrell Inman look like Jerry Rice. For some reason, Aaron Colvin can't get on the field for reasons I'll never understand. But they got to do something about that secondary because it is really bad.
Yeah, that's weird that Colvin doesn't play. That's really weird. Booger McFarland on the broadcast in that game made a great point. There's one thing to be a veteran defense, and it's another to look old and be an old defense. Veteran versus old. It's a fine line. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if the Texans are on the wrong side of that line. Kareem Jackson had a really bad game. He's had a nice season. He's a very good tackler, but he had a very bad game. Tyrann Mathieu was up. I'll be interested. There's another one who's an interesting contract. He's a free agent. Jackson is as well. I would imagine I think they'll let Jackson go. Mathieu will be interesting because the talent is there, but the performance was not there in the second half of the year. He had some poor plays in coverage, gave some really big plays and matchup coverage concepts. He did not flash as a tackler the way you would expect. That's a big deal. I'm with you on that, but I would not dismiss the O-line and Watson running around either, Gary. He took a lot of hits this year, and you wonder why they don't do more spread, quick strike stuff offensively, mm-hmm. especially given their line. They're a very deep drop-back passing team. They keep extra guys in to help block, so they kind of help their line. But the problem is those extra guys blocking invite blitzers, and they also make the plays last longer. And I don't know why they play that way. There's a reason, and I suspect one of two things. One, it could be with Will Fuller out, they're not very fast at receiver. DeAndre mm-hmm. Hopkins, who I think is the best offensive player in the league this year at non-quarterback, he's not a fast guy, though. So longer routes are better for him, slower developing plays. That could be that. Or it could be that they don't feel Watson's a comfortable, quick decision maker yet, which I would be surprised if that's the case, though, because they've admitted he's very comfortable out of spread, empty formations. Whatever it is, this team needs to get its identity honed on offense. And if the identity is what we saw this year, then I'd have to disagree with you and say they do need to get that offensive line better if they're going to be a deep drop-back team.
They do need a better offense. I want to be clear on that. I'm not saying they should ignore the offensive line. I think the secondary is in more dire straits than the offensive line is. It would be my only point. But they need help at all the reactionary positions, I guess, is what it comes down to. One more thing from that game that I wanted to mention, because he's now my favorite player in the world. But Pierre Desir. I realize it's you know, it's not Revis Island stuff that he's doing, but man, if you thought Pierre Desir was gonna get the better of DeAndre Hopkins in a playoff game, if I told you that last summer, you would have probably ignored me and never thought of it again.
He was great. He's a physical corner. Both of those guys, Quincy Wilson at the other corner spot, those are their outside corners and nickel. And then Kenny Moore, who's also very fit. He's a hitter. He's a tackler. Those guys, they've got some big physical corners, which probably is part of the reason they're so good as a team out of cover two. When you play cover two, your corners jam the receivers. You have to jam a receiver out of cover two. You're going to get beat if you don't. So another good job of the Colts matching personnel to scheme, which gets back to the job that Chris Ballard has done at GM.
Really good year. Really good year for the Colts. And obviously we will be previewing Colts Chiefs, all the conference semifinal games on the Thursday deep dive show. One more thing I want to mention. I don't think either of us have an informed take on it, so we'll just sort of mention it and move on. But more and more smoke, Chris Mortensen reporting there's a high probability Antonio Brown is traded by the Steelers. I still say I will believe it when I see it, considering the cap ramifications and what I'm guessing won't be a terribly robust market for a 30 or so year old receiver with obviously with some baggage here.
I think they need to do it because Mike Tomlin needs to get his grip back on that football team. And Antonio Brown has undermined him in a lot of different directions, and they look like an undisciplined team. Whether they are undisciplined or not, there's a bad perception about it, to the extent that the perception has to at least a little bit become reality. I would absolutely trade Antonio Brown, and if I'm going 9-7 next year with cap hit ramifications because of it, I know I'm wasting a Roethlisberger year. I think you got to do it. If you want Tomlin as your head coach long term there, and I would assume they still do, mm-hmm. I think you need to do it then.
All right. I'm sure they'll be talking about that on the Albert Breer podcast on Wednesday with Albert, Jenny Rentis, and Connor Orr. But for now, let's wrap this thing up with the thing of the week, Andy. Would you like to go first?
Because mine's really not very football related.
I have two kind of mini ones, but not that mini. A lot of buzz in New York right now. I'm in the New York area, not New York proper, though the office is there. Cliff Kingsbury, all of a sudden picking up all the steam as a potential head coaching candidate. And look, I do not know what Cliff Kingsbury would be as an NFL head coach. He was he had an innovative offense in college, and I think he's just an enormous question mark. But we're kind of moving back to this thing, I feel like, where teams are so desperate to win the press conference, and they're trying to win the press conference with the young, handsome, 30-something quarterback guru type trying to duplicate Sean McVay type of thing. And we've seen it work sometimes. It obviously worked with Matt Nagy. But two guys who won games on Sunday on the road in the playoffs, Anthony Lynn and Doug Peterson, two guys who really decidedly did not win the press conference and ended up being really good coaches. They're older guys. They have good programs now. I think there's a little bit of madness going on right now, trying to desperately search for your Sean McVay clone when I just don't know if there are many Sean McVay clones out there.
No, that's fair. That's a fair one. My thing of the week, you know, we see these in the playoff games. Even though I fast forward it, I know they're there. And sometimes if I get up to walk out of the room and I don't press pause in the commercials, I hear them. These car commercials that we see in these NFL telecasts where it's real people, not actors, and they bring them into a big, white, empty room, and they smugly tell them about car A and then car B, and they kind of belittle the people who are with car A and we're selling car B. I am bleeping sick of those, and I think they ought to be banned. I want actors. I don't want real people, not actors. I want actors, not real people. Give me a real commercial. I'm sick of those commercials.
I'm kind of with you on that. And Andy, I have a – so I don't know if you've noticed, Progressive does like the parody of that with Flo and I think Jamie is the male character in the Progressive Insurance ads. And I'm going to tell you something, and you can never tell anyone. I really like those Progressive ads.
That's fine. I found myself being uncomfortably charmed by Flo at times as well. Like I'm ashamed at times of how much I enjoy seeing her on TV. So she's an actress. That's what I probably appreciate about it. She's not a real person.
She is.
I hate the real people thing. I hate this. Average Joe, look at that guy. He's just like me on TV. I hate that. He's not just like you. He's on TV and you're not. You really think he's a real person? I guarantee you they've got, well, you know how like the weight loss, the before and after pictures, a lot of times the before guy was actually the after guy who gained the weight for the before and then, well, okay, now he's on the diet. Here we go. Here's the after. That's, I bet, how they do that real actor, a real person, not an actor thing.
I think the rule should be, if you're going to do the real person, not an actor thing, you have to air it live. Like, it has to be unedited and live so we can see exactly how it plays out.
I would love that. Remember on the Norm MacDonald movie, they did a live commercial. And Norm found something in the trunk of the car that derailed the commercial. I'll leave it at that.
Those who know exactly
what I'm talking about.
Dirty Work?
Yes. Yeah. But I don't think we can explain this scene any further.
No,
but
the
20% of our audience that know it, maybe 30 or 40, maybe it might even be 50 or 60.
That's a good movie. That movie should be a cult classic.
That movie felt like Norm MacDonald, every time, he feels like everything's done in one take, doesn't it? Like they just kind of went through the movie and, okay, yes, that's good enough. And it, because Norm MacDonald said it, it was good enough. In fact, it was brilliant. And I bet the script of that movie is the least funny script in the history of comedy movies, but that's a very good movie.
I just want to point out one more thing before we move on from commercials and Norm MacDonald and whatnot. Stephanie Courtney, who is the actress who plays Flo, I knew before she was Flo. I didn't know her personally, but she's in that like Bob Odenkirk troupe. She was in Bob Odenkirk did an indie movie, Melvin Goes to Dinner. She was in that. She was in one of my favorite Adult Swim episodes. It's Tim and Eric's show, Tom Goes to the Mayor. She's in their Christmas episode. She voices one of the characters in that show, too. She actually was one of my, I don't want to say favorite actresses, but up there. I always enjoyed her work. And then she became the Flo from Progressive. Progressive should probably sponsor the show at this point.
Well, all right, I'm going to offset all the good advertising we've given them. If you Google Stephanie Courtney, she's got a mugshot that looks like it's made up, like it's photoshopped, and I can't tell if
that's
it is or not.
No, that's definitely made up. She has not been arrested.
Okay.
Well, maybe she has, but not in that dramatic of fashion. I wanted to give one more mini thing to end this. I guess we kind of ended on a positive note. I figured since we're both jerks, we'd probably end another show on a very down note, complaining about something. But as I was watching Cody Parkey just get, again, just booze raining down on him as he jogged off the field, I always think back to Russell Wilson at the end of his rookie year. They lost in the conference semifinals at Atlanta on a last-second field goal by Matt Bryant. And I remember Russell Wilson being up at the podium, and it was such a it was cheesy, and it was goobery, and I feel bad that it, well, not bad, but I feel like I should roll my eyes at this, but instead I always watch it and I'm like, that was really inspiring. And Wilson got up there at the end of his rookie year and said, you know, as I was, it was such a heartbreaking loss, but as I was jogging to the tunnel, I just got this feeling that this team is so good, and I just can't wait to come back next year with what we have. And obviously, they won the Super Bowl next year. So I'm not saying the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl, but Bears are kind of in that spot where it's a really good young team. Pretty much the whole thing is going to come back. So stop sending mean things to Cody Parkey.
All right.
And that's the show.
This Stephanie Courtney thing still, but I'm not going to get it figured out in time for the show, so we probably ought to just call it.
All right, that'll be a wrap for this one. Thanks to our sponsor this week, ZipRecruiter. Our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. Please support them the way they support us. Thank you to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thank you to producer Shelby Royston and the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound so good on every one of these shows. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. Andy and I are back Thursday. We'll probably have a little mini mailbag, so if you have some questions, send them in. But we'll be breaking down all those conference semifinal games. Four great matchups coming up. If you don't already, please subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys on Thursday.